Mark chapter 8. In those days the crowd was so great, and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, I have compassion, that is, I have pity, I feel sorry for the crowd. They've been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. So these people were so enthusiastic to hear the word of Jesus that they spent 3 days with him and didn't even eat. If I send them away like this to their own houses, they're going to faint on the way, because some of them had come from far. So Jesus had human nature, and he knows exactly how it feels to be hungry and to go day after day without food and then to have to walk a long way. And his disciples said to Jesus, from whence can a man get bread in the desert here for all these people? And he asked them, how many loaves have you got? And they said, 7. And he commanded the people to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves and gave thanks and broke them and gave to his disciples to set before them. And they set them before the people, and they had a few small fishes, and he blessed them and commanded to set them also before the crowd. Now this is very similar to the language of the breaking of bread, when Jesus takes the bread, blesses it, gives it to the disciples. And it just shows that what Jesus was doing here had this sort of religious part to it, a spiritual part to it, that he was willing to fellowship with all these strange people. He was totally open to them. So everyone ate and were filled, and they took up of the broken bits and pieces that were left over 7 baskets. And they that had eaten were about 4,000, and he sent them away. And immediately he got into a boat with his disciples and came into the parts of Dalmanutha. And the Pharisees came forth and began to question with him, seeking of him a sign from heaven, testing him, saying that they wanted to see a sign. And Jesus sighed. He was so sad about them. And he said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I tell you, there will no sign be given to this generation. So people had seen these great miracles, and yet all the same, it wasn't enough for them. They wanted another sign. And so this is why all the emphasis there is by some upon, oh, show me a miracle, or I can show you a miracle. This is not actually the way to really deep faith, because Israel in the wilderness saw miracles every day, but they still turned away from God. And seeing miracles won't actually, believe it or not, make you believe. So Jesus left them, and entering into the boat again, he left for the other side of the lake. So Mark's really recording, chapter after chapter, how Jesus keeps sailing backwards and forwards across the lake at this time. Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, and they didn't have in the boat with them more than 1 loaf. And he said, be careful of the yeast of the Pharisees and the yeast of Herod. Now yeast is what you put in flour that makes it rise up and become a loaf of bread. And he's saying that the teaching of the Pharisees and of Herod was like that, that it influenced people, and it may just appear a little thing like yeast, you don't need much of it to put into the flour. And he's saying, be careful. But they started worrying among themselves, saying, it's because we didn't take any bread. When Jesus knew it, he said to them, why are you discussing because you haven't taken any bread? Don't you realize nor understand? Have you still hardened your heart? Having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? And don't you remember? When I broke the 5 loaves among 5,000, how many baskets full of crumbs did you take up? They say to him, 12. And when the 7 among the 4,000, how many baskets full of crumbs did you take up? And they said, 7.
When they took 12, it was like for the 12 disciples.
Yeah, they would have picked up one each. That's a good thought. Yeah, and maybe like the 12 tribes of Israel. So Jesus is saying, how is it that you didn't understand? That there they were worried about, oh, maybe we upset Jesus by not having bread with us. And he's saying, look, I can create any amount of bread. Don't worry about all these external things. And he comes to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man to him and beg him to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. Now we've seen this going on before, that Jesus Like with the deaf and dumb man, he also did the same. He took him away from the crowd to cure him. And so it is with us, that he wants us to be out of the crowd, and he wants us to deal with him one-on-one. And he'll bring situations into our lives. Maybe you lose your friends, or you move to a new area and you're without friends, whatever you are. And he does things like that to bring us directly to him. And so again, he takes this man, this blind man, out of the town. And when Jesus had spat on his eyes and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw anything. It's a bit like Jesus putting his fingers into the ears of the deaf man. You could say, well, that's going to make him even more deaf. And so Jesus spitting in the eyes of the blind man, you could say, that's going to make him even more blind. Well, no, it's simply the way that God works and the way that Jesus works is the very opposite of how people understand life and how things should be. God's way is different. And of course, the spit of Jesus is like his word. And it is his word that opens our eyes to see as we should do. So Jesus spits on his eyes, puts his hands on him, and asks him if he sees anything. And he looked up and said, I can see men like trees walking. So he can sort of see, but very blurry. He's getting it all wrong still. After that, Jesus put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up. And now he could see every man clearly. And he sent him away to his house, saying, don't go into the town, nor tell it to any in the town. So everybody would have noticed that the blind man was not blind anymore. He didn't actually need to run around teaching that, oh, Jesus has cured me. Then, you know, even more crowds of people would have started hassling Jesus. But his own quiet witness of now, he can see. Didn't need anyone to hold him by the hand or help him cross the road. That was the big enough witness. And so I think the two stages in this healing look forward to how Jesus deals with us. That in this life, we are healed to some degree. We can see, whereas the world generally can't see spiritually. But we're still seeing men like trees. That it's all blurry. And it's only when Jesus comes back and our nature is changed and we live forever, then we will see every man clearly. Whereas now, as Paul says, we look into a darkened mirror and we only get a fuzzy picture. So if we think that, you know, we know everything about God or Jesus or the Bible, well, we don't. We are only seeing a fuzzy picture. Of course, we see something, which the world generally doesn't. But the real clear vision, including being able to see people for who they are, is not now. We'll only see all men clearly when Jesus comes back. Jesus went out and his disciples into the towns of Caesarea Philippi. And by the way, he asked his disciples, whom do men say that I am? They replied, John the Baptist, but some say Elijah, and others one of the prophets. He said to them, but whom do you say that I am? Peter replied, you are the Christ. And he charged them that they should tell no man about him. Because he wanted people to realize for themselves and not be sort of pushed into a sort of a religious kind of acceptance of him because of gossip and hearsay and things like that. And it's the same today. He really wants us personally to read the Bible and to see him for as he is and how he is. And Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man, now who's the Son of Man?
Jesus.
That's right. That the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. So then the chief priests and the religious leaders had it all wrong. They rejected Jesus and killed him. So again, we can't follow people who say that we are the great elders because religious leaders nearly always have had it wrong. You can only just follow God's word in the Bible and his Son. Well, then Peter began to rebuke Jesus because he'd said he was going to die. But when Jesus had turned about and looked on his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, "Get behind me, Satan, because you don't love the things that are of God, but the things that are of men." Now, what does Satan mean?
Adversary.
Good. Adversary. Enemy. So clearly, the word Satan just means an adversary or an enemy. It doesn't mean a big dragon with horns and tail that runs around up in the sky.
That doesn't mean that Peter suddenly sprouted wings and horns.
That's right. He didn't. It just was that he was an adversary. He was against the idea that Jesus had that he was going to go and die on the cross. And Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." Now, the disciples were following Jesus, and he was walking in front of them because it says he turned around and looked at them and looked at Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, walk behind me." Well, Peter already was walking behind him. And the idea is that you can appear to be following Jesus. You can appear to be walking behind Jesus when you're not doing so really. Jesus is saying, "Look, really follow me." And when Jesus had called the people unto him, with his disciples also, he said to them, "Whoever will come after me," or walk after me, walk behind me, "let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." So that leads right on from what I've just said, that Jesus is saying, if you are really going to walk behind me, as you are physically, you realize that you've got to take up my cross, your cross, and follow me. "For whoever will save his life will lose it, but whoever will lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own life, his own self? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" Now, soul is another way of saying yourself, your life. "Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." So then, if we are embarrassed about the words of Jesus, if people say to us, "Are you a Christian?" and we're sort of embarrassed and we sort of say, "Oh man, no, I don't know, not really, go to church sometimes." If we're ashamed of Jesus, well then the Son of Man, Jesus, will be ashamed of us at the Day of Judgment. And that really means that we can only be upfront and open about our faith in Jesus.